Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 2nd of October. We're going to talk about money in the presidential race this hour and also party identification. Former Senator John Edwards announced that he is going to accept public financing for his 2008 presidential campaign. What exactly does that mean? He challenged Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to do the same, and saying that this had nothing to do with his quarterly report, which shows that he is falling farther behind Clinton and Obama in the chase for money. He said this is about taking a stand, a principled stand, and I believe in public financing. Senator John McCain has said that he will accept public financing. Newt Gingrich has said he is not entering the presidential race because a middle-class guy just can't afford to do that. And the money keeps rolling in with both Clinton and Obama taking in a lot of money in the second quarter, not as much money – well, in the third quarter, not as much money as in the second quarter, but, you know, millions and millions of dollars to run for president. So we're going to talk about all of these issues this first hour of our program today and welcome phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And we have two guests with us this hour, kind of fun to mix things up a little bit. Our guest is Professor Grant Rear, Associate Professor and Director of Graduate Studies in the Department of Political Science, Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University in New York. And he is the author of a book just out last week, The Trusted Leader, Building the Relationships That Make Government Work. It's a work about values-based and relationship-oriented leadership skills for managers and executives in the public sector. Professor Grant Rear, hello. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Yeah.
Also joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, is Professor Ken Goldstein, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Goldstein, a pleasure to speak with you again.
Good morning.
Hi. Let's start with this public financing, because I'm not sure what it means to accept public financing. Former Senator John Edwards saying he's going to do this. Interestingly enough, it comes when his third quarter money is released and he's not doing as well as he would like. I'm sure Senator McCain saying that he would like to accept public financing. What does it mean to accept public financing? What do you get?
Well, he's one thing that we need to recognize is that, if I understand the reports correctly, he is saying that he's going to accept public financing for the primary stage of the election. He's not committed to the general stage. I think the stand that he's taking there is the same one that Barack Obama has taken, which is that if the Republican opponent accepts public financing for the second stage, then he will as well.
But okay.
What it basically means is he's qualified for getting public financing by raising a certain number of donations through 20 different states, and he's agreeing to basically limits on spending in exchange for matching funds, and the total amount is approximately $50 million for the primary stage.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me again, how do you qualify for this? You have to get a certain number of donations?
Yeah, you have to raise $100,000, and you have to do it in $25,000 in 20 different states in donations of $250 or less. And then the matching scheme after that matches the first $250 of contributions, and then up to this maximum total amount.
I see. Do you think that this was because he decided to do this? Not really. It wasn't a principled stand, Professor Goldstein, but because he was falling behind in the money chase.
That's a difficult question for me to answer. Hard for me to get in his mind.
Yeah.
But sort of in general, when we see these sorts of decisions made, usually people tend to not run for re-election when they think they don't have a good chance of winning re-election, even though they may give you other reasons. When someone says that suddenly a principled stand now, when perhaps they've been lagging in their fundraising, it's probably a good decision. He's doing a little sort of jujitsu on it. He's taking a weakness, which is he still raised a significant amount of money. Listen, if this was a presidential campaign two cycles ago,
right,
Edwards would be well resourced to go on. But he's still going to have plenty of resources with the matching money to compete in those early primaries, which is then really going to drive what's going to go on afterwards.
What about Newt Gingrich making the comment that he couldn't run because middle-class guys or gals just can't run for this? It's way too much money.
You know, that's like, what was the inspector's name in Casablanca? Shocked. There was gambling going on, and poor old little middle-class Newt never realizing that he had to raise some money to run for president. I think that really doesn't ring true. He has another organization which he's raising money, which he's working actively for. And I think he took a cold, hard-headed look at the race and looked at how late it was, looked at how much money he would quickly have to raise, and decided not to jump in at this point. But, you know, as you know from talking to me before, I try not to make judgments, but I think that's a little bit too much.
Right. Well, somebody needs to jump into the Republican race to capture the fancy of the Republicans. Nobody has yet.
Well, it's much more of a wide open race. Not only if you look at the national polling, but you look at the numbers there in Iowa, for example, and so it's easy to understand why he was looking at it from that perspective. I mean, the only real person, in fact, who's got a surge in the third quarter is Ron Paul, who was up to $2.4 million in the third quarter. He's the only Republican who opposes the war. But I just wanted to also endorse the Professor Goldstein's view on this comment by Newt Gingrich. Although I would say that he's been writing about that particular point and talking about it for a couple of years now. But still, there's some facts there that need to be pointed out. If he's trying to make the point that the limits from BRCRA on campaign contributions, which are essentially $4,600 for both the primary and the general election, somehow cut into the willingness and the ability of the middle class to make campaign donations, that's not a middle class that certainly I would recognize.
Right. Let's talk.
I mean, the one validity of the argument there, and actually BRCRA more than doubled the amount
right.
that individuals could contribute to a campaign. And I think a point worth talking about here, I think there was a line that Steve Forbes said a number of years ago, that he couldn't give Jack Kemp $40 million, so he ran for president by himself. So it's not so much that it's hard. It's also hard for a rich person to run for president. Where we get into it is if you're super-duper rich, to use the term, where you can self-finance.
Right.
And we have one candidate in the race this year who's able to do that. And so his fundraising numbers continually look high, or his cash-on-hand numbers continually look high, because although Mitt Romney has been moderately successful in raising money from others, he's also self-financed, and he's the only one self-financing. So when Newt says it's hard for a middle-class guy, also hard for just your normal rich guy, where it comes in is if you're super-duper rich and you can self-finance.
Absolutely. Right. I think that's a good point. Yeah, and Romney has dumped, I think, again, based on what I've seen, about $6 million into his race in the third quarter.
Wow!
So that's just in this last quarter. So
how does he have so much money?
A venture capitalist and a very good one,
I guess. Wow! You know, it would be something if you pour all that money of your own into a race, and what if you don't win it? You must feel badly about it. Oh, I could have spent the money on something else, right?
I think there's going to be a lot left over.
let's say Michael Bloomberg gets in and spends, you know, $1 billion, then only have 11 left.
Right.
Oh, brother. What about this comment from Edwards? And I think a lot of people, the American voters, would say that they believe in public financing. He says this is about taking a stand, a principled stand. We've got an awful lot of money in this race, and candidates have to spend all this time wooing people who have money, having all these parties, being on the phone, trying to get money. I guess the question is it time for us to take some kind of principled stand and change this system, or is there something worthwhile about it?
Well, I think you've really hit on perhaps the most important issue as far as the way that we go about electing our candidates to office. I think the answer to that is yes. I think the system is broken. I think there are some things to say about what Edwards is doing here, although I agree with Professor Goldstein's caveat about trying to get too deeply into his mind. But another way to think about this, and you brought up a very good point about the fact that they have to spend so much time and energy raising this money, but to think about these candidates and look at the numbers that they're posting at this point and recognize that even the most successful of them is still less than a fifth of the way to where we think they're going to need to get in order to be competitive to win. I mean, the number that we're throwing out now is $500 million.
Wow.
And so, you know, none of them are up to 100 yet. So it's I think it's a system that does need to be changed in some dramatic fashion. And at the state level, there are interesting examples of this in Arizona and in Maine. There are, I think, some examples of public financing that seem to be working reasonably well. They've got their problems, but they're working reasonably well.
Mm-hmm. And what should we learn from them? What could we copy from Arizona or Maine?
Well, I think there's two features for any kind of public financing system that have to exist for it to work. And right now, neither of those two things exist for the presidential system. First of all, you've got to make enough money available in the system to make it viable for candidates to use, given the realities of the spending needs. And that includes incremental matching funds for high-spending, privately financed opponents. And then the second thing you've got to have is you've got to create a certain kind of value attached to running with that public financing. And to link this back to Edwards, it demonstrates, I think, that the perversity that we're at now, and that this move by Edwards is being largely criticized, particularly in the blogs, as being a sign, again, that his campaign is weak and that it's running out of gas and he's getting desperate. So, you know, those two things, I think, at a minimum need to exist, and they don't right now in the way that we do this.
Mm-hmm. Professor Goldstein, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, we're almost in a middle ground that makes the least sense. So there's two options, and I think we fixated on the problem with fundraising. I think a lot of people fixate the problem is that it's buying corruption, it's buying legislation. We can get into an argument about whether politicians can be bought or not. They can't be bought for $2,300.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, especially they can't be bought for $2,300 when, you know, they're going to raise $500 million at least. When John Kerry raised $340 million just to compete in the primary, and then obviously over the summer, George Bush $370 million plus the amount of money they raised for the party, and plus the amount of money they got from public financing. But it's also a small number if you think about it. So it's a small number in what it's going to buy. It's also a small number in how long it takes to raise those great, huge sums. So I think we're in that, you know, middle ground where at $2,300 a pop, campaigns have to spend extraordinary amount of time. And that may be the biggest objection we should have to this, is the time they have to spend raising money is time they're not talking to us. The time that incumbent senators have to spend raising money, the time that incumbent members of Congress who are on a two-year election cycle have to spend raising money, takes away from them doing the people's business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're I think it's unlikely we're going to get any other sort of significant federal campaign finance reform, to just be clear about that. But I think if we do, we either have to make public financing available, or we have to actually significantly increase the maximum number that someone can give. But the other interesting thing to look at in this election is is really the number of donors. I think a lot of people, especially on the Democratic side, were very concerned after BICRA that they would be at a great, great disadvantage, because before BICRA, most people thought that the Republican Party was the party of fat cats. The Republican Party actually had very many, many, many more small donors than the Democrats, and the Democrats were the ones who relied on very, very large soft contributions to make up for that. And the Democratic Party the last couple of years has worked hard to get its small donor base, and the Barack Obama campaign, for example, has worked very hard to get its small donor base. And so even though we're talking about these incredible sums, and I see actually, I was looking on the web, Hillary Clinton just posted her number of $22 million for this past quarter. Those are big sums, but in many cases, they're being raised by a significant number of small donations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good news.
Mm-hmm. Where is all this money going? Is it so expensive because of television ads primarily, or what is it?
Essentially, I mean, that's the big ticket item. And there's a lot of infrastructure and other kinds of efforts on the ground, but, you know, television eats up a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
A little less so in the primaries, but that's
right.
Absolutely true. But in a typical modern election campaign, about 60% of the money is going to go to television advertising.
60%?
60%.
Couldn't they give these candidates some kind of cut rate?
they actually do, but the candidates don't take it. it's a bit complicated, but political advertising, election advertising, is guaranteed the lowest unit rate, but the lowest unit rate doesn't guarantee that your ad will actually air and when it will air. And so the campaigns want to make sure that they have guaranteed spots at guaranteed times on the shows that they're targeting. And in targeted states like a Wisconsin, you get incredible amounts of advertising, and it's a market.
I just want to jump in on two things that, was said. I think the point about the large number of small donations and the way that the number of donations has been, number of donors has been increasing, I think is an important one. And the Internet is a big part of that story. It's been a big part of that story with Obama. It's a big part of that story with Edwards. It was certainly a big part of that story with Kerry and with Howard Dean. And so that's something I think that, bodes well and is a trend that's happening kind of outside of the basic legal structure of the system in some ways. But the other thing I'd want to also point out is I agree that $2,300 is not going to buy you very much as an individual from a presidential candidate. But that's not the real problem. The problem is, from what sectors of society do those $2,300 contributions come from? And how do they all add up? And it's not so much that I think a presidential candidate and then later a president sits there and says, okay, I've been bought by the X sector of society. But it's rather the nature of the experiences that they have over the course of a couple, 3 years and running, and where they're going and who they're interacting with in order to generate that. And I think that does have an effect, and I think it's got a problematic effect.
Do you agree, Professor Goldstein?
Yes, but the problem also is politicians are creatures of where they come from. So if someone's raising lots of money from the financial industry, it's likely that they've had connections with the financial industry for their whole life. And so those are the sorts of people they've been interacting with. If they're raising money from lawyers, it's likely they've been connecting with lawyers their whole life. So on the one hand, you could say, well, look at all this money that John Edwards is raising from trial lawyers. Those are the people he's interacting with, so those are going to be the sorts of people whose issues are at the top of his head. On the other hand, he was a trial lawyer. Those have been the people he's been hanging out with his whole life in any case.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We have a lot of people who want to weigh in on the issue. The number is 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. We have two guests with us this hour, Professor Ken Goldstein, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Professor Grant Rear, Associate Professor and Director of the Graduate Studies Department of Political Science at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University. Money in politics, John Edwards saying that he would accept public financing for his 2008 presidential campaign, the amount of time that the candidates have to spend getting money, Newt Gingrich's comments that you can't be middle class and run for president, the amount of money that has come in the third quarter. Senator Clinton just posted her numbers for the third quarter, not as good as the second quarter, but still a substantial amount of money. Where all the money is going and if there's a better system. And we'll branch into other areas as well because we're on the campaign trail now with both these guests. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. If you want to send us an email, we can try that as well. It's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. All right, let's go to Greg. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Yes, I've got a couple comments to make, I guess. It seems to me that because John Edwards does not have the money that he thinks he needs, that perhaps he as a candidate doesn't have the correct standing on the issues and is not popular among his peers. I think that kind of bespeaks writing in the sand. The other thing is that I guess in one sense I believe that the system is good in that somebody that does garner grassroots support can actually multiply his monetary contributions this way. And I guess the third thing I want to say is that I'm really encouraging people to promote the idea of a Obama-Clinton ticket. That's basically all I want to say.
All right. Thanks so much. Who wants to start? Professor Goldstein?
Sure. I mean, I think that was more of a comment or a question, but I'll... You know, one important point to make about this election, make about the last presidential election, John Kerry did not lose the 2004 presidential election because of lack of money. And nobody this time around is going to lose this election because of lack of money. Even those folks on the Republican side who were struggling along, even a John McCain, who raised and blew through a ton of money, is going to have enough money to compete in Iowa, to compete in New Hampshire. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama have obviously raised significant sums. John Edwards, although he lags a bit behind, has raised enough money to compete. So there certainly are problems with the system, but there also are an immense number of small donations coming in. And I think no one's going to lose this presidential election or lose this presidential primary nomination fight because of lack of money.
Yeah. Let's talk about the front runners on the Democratic side. Professor Rear, do you think this is a lock for Senator Clinton?
Well, it's a very interesting and unusual...
Whoa, your phone is fading here a little bit. Hello?
Pardon me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
We just can't hear you very well.
Oh, well.
Huh.
I'm shouting into the phone.
Are you really? Yeah, there's something wrong with our system here. I don't know what. All right, I'm going to call you back because we just can't hear you very well.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay.
I'll
yeah.
hang up.
Okay. All right, great. So let me ask, we'll keep that question for him on hold. Professor Goldstein, what do you think? Same question. Hello? Oh, no, I see what I did wrong. I got the wrong. Okay. Professor Goldstein, what do you think?
Okay. Listen, Hillary Clinton, it's obviously her nomination to lose, and it's been her nomination to lose from the start, and she's got to be considered the strong, strong front runner. That said, I wouldn't be paying so much attention to the national numbers. I'd be paying very, very strong attention to what's going on in Iowa and to a lesser extent, New Hampshire. I think a lot of people, when all the primaries got pushed up to, when major big primaries got pushed up to February 5th, assumed that the early primaries of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina would be less important. But I think they've actually become more important.
Hmm.
You see the amount of money being spent by the candidates there. You see the amount of time being spent by the candidates there when they're not elsewhere raising money, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And if Hillary Clinton wins Iowa, it's hard for me to see how she doesn't just
really
dominate and go on to the nomination very quickly. If Barack Obama, if John Edwards is able to win the Iowa caucus, get some momentum to go into New Hampshire, and they will have the funds to compete in New Hampshire and show strongly in New Hampshire, they will then have the funds to compete in the bigger primaries down the line starting on February 5th, and we will have an open race.
Yeah.
At this point, though, you got to say it's Hillary Clinton to lose, but, you know, there's about as many people are going to go to the Iowa caucus on the Democratic side and the Republican side each as go to a University of Wisconsin football game. So caucus attendees are going to be, you know, a little bit more, right? 100,000, 110, maybe 120,000. So it's a very small population of people.
Right.
They have to come out on a cold, wintry night in Iowa, and it's very difficult to predict turnout. And the surveys in Iowa are both very close and very unpredictable, and that could shake up the race in a very, very big way.
What do you think, Professor Rear?
I just caught the tail end of what Professor Goldstein was saying, but I think I agree with probably everything he said. I certainly agree with the last part. I think it will depend a lot on how she does in those first couple contests. I'm not so sure. I guess I'd go as far as to say it's hers to lose at this point because the candidates are different and unusual, and they've all got different strengths and interesting weaknesses as well. And I'm not quite sure how those are going to play out. So, but I think that those early contests are going to be very important for her. And if she stumbles at the right out of the gate, then things are obviously going to be wide open.
Mm-hmm. And why is it? What is it about her? Is it that we know her? We're familiar with her? Is it the Clinton name? Do we still like Bill Clinton? Why is it that national polls show her so far ahead, Professor Goldstein?
Well, you know, again, she's at a solid, if you look at all the national polls, 40, 41, 42, 43%
right.
of the vote. You know, and I guess, you know, that half glass or half full. She's obviously well-known. She's obviously a strong hero to base Democrats. She's obviously building on the popularity of her husband, President Clinton. often in primaries when the other candidates are less well-known. Support goes to those people who are known. But I think what if you wanted to do the Clinton's not going to win scenario, the argument would be along the lines that wow, even with all those advantages, she's only at 40, 41, 42, 43, and that represents a ceiling for her rather than a floor. I'm not sure I'd go that far, because when you also sort of look into the internals of her support, the internals of her support look like the internals of people who have won Democratic nominations in the past. And the internals, the demographics, the characteristics of Barack Obama supporters look a lot like Paul Tsonga supporters, Bill Bradley supporters, Howard Dean supporters, candidates that caught some strong media attention and had a good run but ended up not winning their party's nominations. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, I absolutely agree with Professor Rear. I think it's more likely that Hillary wins the nomination. I think if you put a gun to either of our heads, we'd say that she's going to win the nomination. But even though all this attention has been paid to the national number, all this attention has been paid to the later primaries, Iowa, 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 and the 110,000, 120,000 people who are going to come out on a January, or perhaps even December, the way things are going.
I know, isn't that crazy?
To attend their caucus.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Dan is next from White Lake. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm wondering whether there's any hope to force public financing on the candidates by prohibiting fundraising. If you can limit it, why can't you make it illegal for any sitting member of the legislature, any legislature, to take anything of value at any time while they're a sitting member of the legislature, and force them then, if they want to run for reelection, to take public financing?
Well, it's a good question, and the Supreme Court has very clearly decided that is a violation of free speech, and so it's easier to limit the donations than you can limit spending. That's much more difficult to limit and stay within constitutional rulings. But even when those limits on contributions get too low, as they did in Vermont, for example, they are overturned, and so that's essentially the problem we're dealing with.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Edward from Clintonville. Hi, Edward.
Hi.
Hi.
For taking my call this morning. If I may suggest a financial scenario, what if we developed a pool of public money for all to donate to? And because we are paying for the elections through big business anyway, each candidate will draw from the pool equally. We'll hear more from our candidates because they won't be fundraising, and it will place the elections back in the hands of the people of America where it should be.
Professor Goldstein.
Sure and interesting. I once had a friend in graduate school who thought that you should allow people to give however much money they wanted, but it had to be masked. So, you know, we all talk about disclosure, disclosure, disclosure. I talk about disclosure, disclosure, disclosure. But his argument was, you can give as much money as you want to a candidate, but you just can't tell the candidate it was you who gave the money. You know, for what the caller is suggesting, it's sort of a really a modification of the system we have now. It's a sort of federal financing, and we do have our little $3 checkoff on the tax form, and it's also a modified what's going on in Maine and Arizona, except the money is coming directly from people rather than from public coffers and tax money. The problem in any sort of public financing system, and these sorts of things, you know, can be discussed and perhaps made workable, is how do you define who's a legitimate candidate or not? What sorts of thresholds need to be met for candidates to then get their publicly funded money?
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call, Edward. We have a couple lines open. They've been quite crowded. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Spend a little bit of money, money's on the mind, a little bit of time on the Republican side here. Who's been leading the field? Mitt Romney, we talked about giving a lot of his own cash on hand to his campaign. Who's been able to collect a lot of those, you know, smaller small donor contributions among the Republicans? Anybody?
This is Ken. Say the truth, I don't know. I haven't looked at the contribution base of each of the Republicans. My sense would be there's probably not significant variance there.
Mm-hmm.
And although Professor,
that was going to be my sense. And again, I'll say I haven't seen good figures on that in terms of how widely spread the donor base is and where the money's coming from. If you look at the national poll figures, at least in the last month, you know, clearly it looks like a two-person race, but it's, again, it just seems like there's a lot more volatility in that field. But, you know, you're looking at Thompson and Giuliani and then Romney and McCain as the second two. But they're all generating enough money to be competitive, and I think that one's just a much more wide-open
mm-hmm.
race.
Yeah. Let's go to Bob from Madison. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As a Democrat, my concern with Hillary Clinton is that she would bring out she may get, you know, if she were the nominee, and she may even become president, but she would bring out the Republican vote so much so that we could possibly lose the House and the Senate because she is polarizing.
Hmm.
But I'll take my answer off there.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's little risk of the Democrats losing the House and the Senate, but I think the caller is articulating a concern that you're starting to hear from some Democrats, and the line you'll hear in previous years is hard to see how Hillary loses the nomination, hard to see how she wins the general election. What are the fundamental factors that drive presidential elections? And Rush Greer and I can, you know, maybe be embarrassed about our discipline, but we've done all this research, and we basically know that Democrats vote for Democrats and Republicans vote for Republicans and independents vote for the winner. And I think one of the most significant things that's happened in the last year or two, which I don't really think has gotten enough attention, has been the significant change in party identification, that now more Americans are identifying themselves as Democrats.
Mm.
And that also Democratic loyalty and Democratic intensity and interest, which suggests the Democratic turnout will be very high as well. So, yeah, Democrats vote for Democrats, but it also matters what proportion of Democrats vote for Democrats and what the loyalty of those Democrats are. What you'll hear on the Republican side is a very, very demoralized Republican electorate. There's fewer of them. They're less intense. But the one thing that could get them intense, could get them interested, could get them to turn out, is the Hillary Clinton candidacy. And I think that actually is a concern among some Democratic strategists and perhaps some Democratic voters. And what's going to be interesting is whether Barack Obama and John Edwards try to use that message. One of the other dynamics that is going on now is the race keeps going and going and going. At some point, Edwards and Obama are going to have to make a more forceful argument about why they should be the nominee rather than Hillary Clinton. And Edwards tried to do that a bit in the last debate, and both of those candidates have been trying to do that, but in a very gingerly fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Each wants the other to jump off the cliff first, because I think they probably both remember what happened in Iowa in 2004 when Howard Dean and Dick Gephardt, who were neck and neck, way in the lead in Iowa, committed what one consultant called a murder-suicide when they both went negative on each other, and then John Kerry and John Edwards,
right,
who were 3 and 4, popped up.
Right.
But one of the arguments is Hillary Clinton electable? Do we want to do this? At some point, the Obama campaign and the Edwards campaign are going to have to make that argument. And they'd really like the other one to make it first.
Well, what about if the Republican nominee is Giuliani? It seems to me as though you wouldn't have the same kind of turnout to vote against Hillary if you got Giuliani, who the conservative base is not at all crazy about.
I don't know if that's the case, because, again, it's so much of this is going to be – I agree with what Professor Goldstein said, and that if what he's saying is true, and I think it is, and the concern is real, and I could add a couple things to it even, it doesn't really matter too much who the Republican nominee is then at that point in terms of that particular concern and that particular dynamic. And if it's Giuliani in particular, you know, you've got, in a sense, a New York rematch of something that never happened in the first place, if that makes sense. But, you know, there are concerns here with to go back to the Clinton campaign. When you look at the level and intensity of the negatives that she carries with her and can't seem to shed, and also when you look at how she does run against hypothetical Republican opponents and compare that to her Democratic rivals, and then compare that again to how she's running against her Democratic rivals for the primary, there's a steep drop off there, and I think it's something that again may end up concerning people.
Mm-hmm. What about the comments yesterday? Who was it who was on TV news last night, the NBC News? I was watching the interviewing what's his name with one of the family values voting blocks, who was saying that if Giuliani is the guy, you know, they're very unhappy with him, and they're looking at third party.
Well, then, yeah, I mean, you do have the concern that you're going to have people that are just not going to be as interested in voting at all. I mean, that would be the worry on the Republican side for a Giuliani candidacy, and then, of course, the third-party challenge. But if we're thinking about it, I think in terms of the excitement or the kind of negative excitement that's going to get generated by a Clinton candidacy, I'm not sure I see that dropping off all that much, depending on who the Republican nominee is.
Mm-hmm. Want to weigh in on that, Professor Goldstein?
Yeah, if the Republican nominee is my yellow lab, Sonny, who's sitting at my feet,
and oh,
the Democratic nominee is Clinton, Republicans will come out. It would be all about Senator Clinton.
Oh, really? What kind of dog do you have, a yellow lab?
Yep.
Oh, sitting at your feet.
And another little mutt, so he doesn't get jealous, Ronnie, that I mentioned.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Our number is 800-486-8655, or... if you're in Milwaukee, you can call us at 414-227-2050. If you'd like to send us an email, that would be fine. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. We're talking about money in the race and branching into a few other areas as well. Professor Ken Goldstein is professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Grant Rear, associate professor and director of the graduate studies in the Department of Political Science at Syracuse University. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we go to Craig next from Oshkosh. Hi, Craig.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess my question to your guest is, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about campaign finance reform and trying to provide some greater equity amongst the candidates. And if that is the case, doesn't that by definition give an advantage to the incumbent? Because they are, if the financing is equal, the incumbent has all these built-in advantages. And I'm wondering how that might come into play, and I'll take my call off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Craig.
That's good. You've taken a good political science class. I mean, that's a very, very good comment. And the logic there is of the argument, or the premise of the argument, is that incumbents are already well known, and that campaigns may be a retrospective evaluation on the incumbent, but a challenger who is less well known has to introduce themselves to the voters and has to make the argument about why an incumbent should not be rehired, should not be reelected. And the political science evidence, although you get into all sorts of complicated things, does tend to show that challenger spending has a greater impact on election outcomes than incumbent spending does. So in any sort of public finance system, in any sort of system in which you just mandate equality, that's something you'd want to worry about. That said, empirically, maybe Professor Rear can help me out, I can think of very, 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 very few races where the challenger actually ends up outspending
incumbent. Well, that's the key point. I mean, everything you said is true, but then there's the big however, and the however is everything that you just said also makes it likely that the incumbents are going to be much better positioned to raise more money. And people know that going in. A lot of folks, particularly at lower-level elections, want to bet on the winner. And so if you create a system that is more equitable, I think the overall effect is you're going to create more competition in the system for that very reason. The other thing to be said about it is, and I don't know if the caller was thinking about what level he was thinking about, but I think also that becomes far less of an issue when you're talking about a presidential campaign or even, let's say, the level of a United States Senate campaign. That's something that's much more relevant at the state legislative level and at the congressional level.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Ed from Wausau. Hi, Ed.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
This last Sunday, I found it difficult to get away from the politics. It seemed like when I was watching ABC, George Stephanopoulos was talking about, Hillary and, a flip over to Tim Russert, same thing. I finally, thank goodness for CBS Sunday Morning, I could get away from it. But
get away from Hillary? She was
the politics.
Oh, the politics. Okay.
But here I am, listening to a political show. But, during the week, also the Good Morning programs and also the cooking shows, like Bill and Hillary have been splitting up and they've been hitting all the cooking shows, the morning programs, and the networks when they talk about, the Oprah effect on Obama. I mean, they do it in kind of a negative fashion. And I think, the decision's already been made according to the mass media, and I think that, in turn, reflects on the national polls. But I'd like to hear your comments.
Okay. Professor Goldstein?
Listen, obviously, if you tune into those shows, you're going to get your politics, right? If you go to McDonald's, you're going to smell a French fries. If you tune in on the Sunday morning shows, you're going to start to smell the politics a bit. And obviously, we've also seen politics creeping into other areas. I really do think the more the better, because when we look at the great, the denominator of what conversation is like in this country. Small stories on Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan or O.J. Simpson still way outweigh any sort of discussion of politics. The problem is we don't really get a very serious discussion of politics in this country, even when it's covered on the news and even when it's covered on places like local news, which most people get their information from. It's rarely covered, and it's rarely covered in depth and substantive fashion. We tend to pay attention to, frankly, the sorts of things that we're talking about on this call here: strategy, horse race, who's ahead, who's behind, and end up not going into some of the serious issues. So I certainly think the more the better in terms of political speech out there. Often I would rather have that a little bit more substantive, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, though, there is an irony to that, that there does seem like there's greater saturation. There's a much more of a celebrity aspect to a lot of our political discussion and political culture that the caller is putting his finger on. But at the same time, then, there is this alienation from politics and a distance from it. And I think those, one isn't driving the other, but they're not unrelated. And so the problem with the nature of the coverage and the nature of the discussion is again a real critical one, I think, right up there with the way we finance a campaign.
When do we seriously tune into all of those issues and seriously decide who we're going to be voting for? Is it now?
Well, it's at different places for different people. And to go back to the old saw of Democrats vote for Democrats, Republicans vote for Republicans, Independents vote for the winners. A lot of the folks that pay the most attention to this and really follow it the most closely have made up their minds. And other folks are going to wait till the last minute and make their decisions on a whole variety of different kinds of what we might consider to be odd factors, depending on what they are. So it's a whole mishmash of things, but that doesn't change the basic fact that if we're not if people aren't being exposed and we're not creating an environment in which there's a deeper discussion of some of the issues in such a way that draws people in the same way that some of the other things are drawing people in, I think we're going to have a continuing problem of the way people are arriving at their decisions.
I see. And Professor Oldstein, those issues that we want a deeper discussion of would be what? Iraq, healthcare?
Iraq.
Healthcare,
Social Security reform,
mm-hmm.
all sorts of major issues going on, which really get fairly little serious attention from either side.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking some yesterday, we did with this S-CHIP program, about the Democrats all having their plans and fairly elaborate plans on reforming healthcare. Once again, it's a case where the Republicans, this is an issue, I'll bring this up with both of you and see why you think they haven't moved on this. This is an issue that Republicans and Democrats and independents and everybody in the country is very concerned about, and yet the Republicans are just not moving on it. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, that's the reason why I think a lot of folks would have liked to have seen Newt Gingrich, to go back to the beginning of your program, get into this race, because he has written a lot on this. He's worked with Hillary Clinton in some ways on this, and I think that that's the kind of what he would have brought to the Republican primary campaign.
Interesting. Policy. He's a policy guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Newt obviously has lots of baggage in it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess perhaps less radioactive as the years go by with base Democrats, or maybe they hate George W. Bush so much they forgot how much they hated Newt Gingrich.
He's rehabilitated.
But that's he is extraordinarily articulate and a serious policy thinker. You may agree or disagree with him, but he is the most serious policy thinker on the Republican side, I think.
And it doesn't seem to matter how many wives you've had anymore.
Well, the number is going up.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? Right. Scott from Green Bay is next. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a couple of quick points. Your guess is that Republicans vote for Republicans, Democrats and independents vote for the winner. I'm wondering if that's a new phenomenon, because in 1992-96, that certainly wasn't the case where the independents voted for the winner. They voted for a third-party alternative. And then I'd like to tie that into, I know we think that Bill Clinton is a great asset to Hillary, but at the same time, we tend to forget that he never got 50% of the electorate in both elections. He got 43% in 92. 57% of the people did not vote for Bill. And then in 96, he got 48%. And I know Democrats tend to look on that as the glory years and that this is going to be a great asset and a great benefit. But here's got more than 50% of the vote.
Okay, your phone is kind of cutting in and out, but we got the gist here. Professor Goldstein.
Yeah, listen, I think those are important points. Listen, the party identification finding that party identification is something that tends to endure and move very glacially in people's individual and aggregate patterns is something that's been well known since the 1950s. And certainly there can be more loyalty or less loyalty among partisans, and more or less change among partisans. In 1992 and 1996, Ross Perot did receive a significant number of independent votes. And the point also about President Clinton never getting over 50% is interesting. And there's still some debate about whether Ross Perot, not in 96, but whether Ross Perot cost the Republicans the election in 1992. The Clinton campaign put a lot of effort, and Bill Clinton personally really, really, really wanted to be over that 50% mark in 1996. The other question about how much Bill helped Hillary. Bill clearly helped Hillary. The problem comes as people get to hear Hillary more and compare Hillary to Bill,
mm-hmm.
And it's an unfair comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Bill is a once, twice, three times in a lifetime political talent. And one of the things about the Clinton campaign is she's not Bill, and she's still also, I think, not where she should be in terms of her presentation style and her speech-making style. She's got the little sarcastic laugh down.
Right.
But I think especially when you see Clinton give a speech and then you see Hillary Clinton give a speech, if you're going to a Hillary Clinton speech,
follow up on
that? Oh, yeah.
I think that's a good point, and to tie it back also to the caller, it is very important to remember that the quality of the candidates, particularly for presidential elections, matters a lot. And I think Clinton is a great example of that. When you go back to, again, the day after the election in 1992, and Jim Carville is doing his press conference, and they're asking him, how did you pick the lock on the Electoral College? How did you do this? The very first thing out of his mouth is, well, we started with a good candidate.
Hmm.
And, you know, there is an enormous difference between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen speeches where one has followed the other, and the difference is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
They each have different strengths. Hillary Clinton has some things I think Bill Clinton doesn't have in terms of candidate quality, but there is this difference, obviously, and so that really does matter, the quality of the candidate, and that's what can move people. It was certainly
right.
a factor with Ronald Reagan
right.
In getting some of the votes from the Democrats.
And maybe in a factor with Barack Obama.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think again that's why. And even with John Edwards and sort of the path and the journey he's on, I think this
mm-hmm.
I think this public financing actually represents more than just a strategic move. I think it's a journey he's on. But
and we
gotta, that's gonna play a factor.
We have to end. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. I had such a good time. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks to Professor Grant Rear from the Department of Political Science at Syracuse University, Professor Ken Goldstein, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, for producing the hour. John Treader, on-air production. Thanks for all of your calls. The news is coming up.